Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to A Hoops Journey, episode 130. You'll be breaking down this episode probably during a spring break if you're a teacher. If you're a parent, you're going to be trying to find out things for your kids to do so they don't annoy you too bad. But we've got a hoop icon here today, a gentleman whose name has come up many times in this podcast, from Junior Cadugan to Jermaine Anderson, and the list goes on and on. A gentleman with a unique background. I mean, everybody knows the name. I know the name being a West Coaster, and I'm excited to get to know a little bit more about him. When we talked on the phone yesterday, one of the funny things about basketball is how we're really all closely connected. You know, I mentioned a guy at Brandon that I do, and this guy tells me that he ended up babysitting him when he was a kid, or looking out for him on the playgrounds when he was a kid. So we have none other than the triple OG, as we would call it on this podcast, Mr. Roe Russell. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, man. You know, you and I texting a few months ago, and then I kind of went into zero dark 30 mode. Things got busy with life and then finishing up our high school basketball season. So I appreciate you circling back to me and being willing to do this, knowing you're just finishing camp today and running around, still involved in the game. And ironically, one of the things Jermaine said is in his episode that he remembered most about you was you're always able to and willing to pick him up and give him a ride. And then you just said to me, I'm just running around and I had to drop off a kid. So decades later, things haven't changed, huh?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you try to work with kids and you have a personal relationship with them. So, you know, that leads to you dropping them off, picking them up, helping them out, talking to their parents, helping them with their homework, working individual with them, driving them to a university, you know, helping them out with different costs. And, you know, this is how I am.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the unique thing about you, man, your vision and the things that you kind of started doing a lot earlier than a lot of people did, in terms of the prep scene and sort of the AAU thing, and something that's sweeping out west. And I'm sure you're noticing it as well. And really kind of taking over here in BC too. It's huge. We've never had more people playing the game and so many areas to chop it up, but I'd like to quickly just go back and share a little bit about yourself as a young guy and growing up, and why basketball was the sport that you ended up choosing or that you were really drawn to. What was it about the game?
Well, before I go into what it was about the game, it was like before the game. So before the game, when I came to Canada from Jamaica, both my parents were entrepreneurs, so I grew up in a very, you know, well-to-do area, and I was the only black kid in the area, and so I played hockey most of my life until then. I didn't even really know about basketball at that point. It was all hockey, you know, NHL. I was trying to go to the NHL. I wasn't like your regular kid that's trying to go to the NBA, you know?
What was the game like? How were you, a good skater or what? Like, what? Talk
yeah,
to me
I was
here.
Pretty good. No, I was, yeah? I was really good. I played MTHL, which is called in Ontario, and the next level of it would be me billeting somewhere and playing OHL and whatever. And I played until I was pretty competitive league until I was 12. But I faced so much racism in mm-hmm. being the only black kid in the whole league that I, you know, it was tough on me. And so I started looking around for different things. And that's where I found basketball. And I started, mm-hmm. so because I started late, I was training and practicing like maybe 8 to 10 hours a day, trying to catch up, because most of my friends, they started playing when they were like 2 or 3. And so that's where my training mentality came from, to the point when I was 13, a year later, I was training most of those kids that, you know, that were playing since they were 2 or 3. And then I started training them. And so then I started to coach at 15. And then I started my grassroots organization when I was 18, while I was in high school.
Come on now. Okay. So yeah. The first thing that stuck out to me was you mentioned not only being like the son of immigrant parents, but also you mentioned the name entrepreneurial, because I was going to ask you where that mindset came from to have that vision. And like you're touching on already, seeing yourself in a role at 13, 15, 18 years old that not many of us got. It took us, you know, till we were 25 or 30 to figure that out. Was that because of your parents? Was it a combination of that and you just sort of branching out and figuring it out for yourself? Or did you always have that sort of savvy and entrepreneurial thing that was passed down?
Yeah, most of it was from my parents because I used to work for them when I was like 4 or 5. When I was when I first came from Jamaica, I was cleaning up and making sales and going on errands for the business and just became that businessman when I was younger and try to be entrepreneurial and independent and a go-getter. And so that really shaped my whole life and my mindset. And then my passion for basketball when I really, took basketball for what it was and didn't really look at it for all the dunks and all the splash of it, but like the fundamentals and the footwork and the form and all the different things that makes you become that best player you could be. And so put that together, that enabled me to be sort of a prodigy of sorts in terms of doing everything at a young age and just being so passionate to be the best I can as soon as I can.
Good stuff. Also curious, I didn't want to brush by it. I think you bring up an interesting and kind of a sad point about sort of, being the only person of color on the ice back in the day and seeing how far hockey's progressed, but knowing what it was like around our generation. I'm not sure exactly how old you are. I'm 46. So, being a predominantly pretty white sport, what's that like for a kid your age going home every day? What's the message from your parents? How do you build yourself up to work through those racist comments? And when did you know it was just too much, where you were just like, you know what, this isn't for me and I can't fight the fight anymore and I'm going to try something else? Because that's a very unique thing that we're talking about. No one's really, I'm thinking 129 episodes, no one's got a story like that so far.
Well, yeah, it was a tough time. It was the early 70s and I was the only black guy, black kid in the league, and you're going down the ice and your best team's left wing, the second leading scorer in your team, and all the parents are trying to get into your head to help their team win. So they're calling me the N-word and all that kind of stuff all the time. And so, as 11, as a 9, 10, 11-year-old, it gets to you. And then you start, looking around for different opportunities elsewhere where, you feel more comfortable and there's less resistance against you. And, you watch college basketball and then the NBA finals back in the day. And then you see, guys like, Kareem and Dr. J and all those kind of guys. And then you say, hey, that looks more like what I should be doing right now based on what it is. And so you make that switch, but then you start later compared to all your friends. So now you got work and work and work to get better and better to catch up.
Mm-hmm. And then going through those experiences, do you think that it made you a more, as becoming a coach, a more inclusive person, or just more self-aware that, hey, every kid that walks in this gym deserves an opportunity to show and prove, and they deserve coaching, no matter what they look like, how tall they are, the color of their skin, they deserve an opportunity to be part of something bigger than themselves. You feel like that impacted you in your coaching?
Yes, definitely. I felt like I've been there. I've done that. I know exactly how you feel. I want to help you to get those opportunities that you don't normally get based on color of your skin and where you're from and your experiences and your family units and all that stuff. So that was that kind of my mission and my ministry to really look out for that guy that, isn't in the mix and in the system to help him to get there, because that's what I was from.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Sorry, I just wanted to touch on that, and I appreciate your reflection. It's really good. We're obviously trending in a way better direction than we were in the early 70s, and that's around when I was born too. But we still do have a lot of work to do in that area, I think, especially when it comes to sport. I mean, you see some of the things that happen with European soccer leagues and things like that, and fans thinking that they just have the right to say whatever they want no matter what. And we are doing better, but I still think there's lots of work that can be done.
Yeah, definitely. It was a tough time. It wasn't as diverse and inclusive as it is now. And so you had to fight for everything you got. And, you know, that's why I'm super old school. and I would learn to, sort of bridge that gap between the old school and the new school. And that's why I'm still relevant after all these decades.
I believe, what am I supposed to say? That's no cap. No cap, coach. No cap. It is true, though. You know, I think you think about coaches over generations. The ones that have been able to last have adapted with the times, right? You can sit and fight it all you want, but you have to be able to sit back and realize. And, you know, like I said, I'm 46 now. My last year playing basketball at Brandon was 2001. And I've been coaching ever since, right? So a lot has changed in that time. And if we don't continue to update ourselves, how do we connect with those kids? How do we get them to buy into what we're trying to, not necessarily word sell, but just sort of, hey, be a part of this. I need you to play this role. I need you to guard that guy. I need you to be a knockdown shooter. Because kids these days, and I'm not sure what your thought is on this. I don't think they connect I'm just going to do it because coach says so. There has to be some sort of relationship and connection too. How do you feel about that thought?
Yeah, I'm a little bit, a few years older than you. Mm-hmm. Even though I've been doing it for 36 years, but, it was easier. I loved those back in the day when kids are like, hey, how high, how far, whatever you want me to do, coach, I'll do it now. Why? I'll go over here instead, and they're questioning you and all that stuff. So times have changed, and you try to bring them back to old school to do whatever you got to do, because that's what you have to do. Like, you're not going to get it your way. When you go to college, even when you go to prep school or whatever, the coach is the king, and it's about what he says and he goes and how he feels. So you're not going to have it your way. It's not your world. And so I preach that all the time to the kids, that you got to be adaptable, you have to be adjustable if you want to get through, because it's not about you at this point. You get to the NBA, even in the NBA, it's not about you. It's about the All-Star, about the Hall of Famer, about the lottery pick or whatever. So you're going to always have to work.
Yeah. And I listen to so many podcasts too, where they just talk about, like, you have to be a star in your role, right? Like, and just because you're 20 points a game on a club team in Ontario or a high school team in BC, you might be the sixth man on your university team, right? So you better be ready to embrace that role and be the best you can at it. Good stuff, man. We're off to a banging start here. I love it. I want to go back to talking about being 15 and 13 and coaching, and then 18 starting your adventure. Why did you know that that was the time? What inside of you made you think, like, I'm ready to do this. I can do it. Obviously, knowing that you didn't know everything about X's and O's and that side of the game or whatever, but why take that leap at such a young age where many people would sort of be hesitant or not ready for that yet?
I think, like I said before, I had such a early start being an entrepreneur, being a leader, being a go-getter, being a outside-the-box thinker that you said, hey, I don't mind if I'm a teenager or it's not conventional. This is kind of where I want to go, because when I had so much experience from training other kids and them getting better, and then, I used to charge $1 an hour. Is what I charged when I was 13, when I was charging kids. And I actually made a lot of money for me, even though it was only $1, when they had back in the day when they had the paper dollar. Before the loonies and toonies. And, you got so good at it that you're like, hey, it doesn't matter how old I am and so forth. I got so much experience at a young age that I'm just going to go for it all. I'm going to start coaching all the kids that I got training. I'm going to put a team together, start coaching. And then by the time you're 18, you're like, hey, I got so much guys that I'm training. I'm just going to make a organization. I'm making a program. And go on the road and, play in Toronto. Let's go down to Buffalo. Let's go to Detroit. Let's go to Rochester. Let's go to Pennsylvania. And then all of a sudden, guys are getting scholarships. So you keep on moving with it until the point where you got guys getting the MBA and you got hundreds hundreds of guys going to the NCAA, and now, 36 years later, I'm a vet. I'm a vet, and someone that's been doing it longer than most.
Yeah, man. So 18, is there a couple mentors that you're leaning on? Who are you learning from? Are you just trial by error and fire and convincing parents, like, don't worry about my age, I've got this together. Like, you can trust me to take your son to, like you said, New York, Buffalo. Or is there anybody else kind of in your corner at this point?
Yeah, there's some early mentors that I had. Corey Joseph's father, David Joseph, he was one of my mentors when I was young, and moving up the ladder and gave me really good advice and training me. I had this guy named Donnie Williams who trained me and gave me some real advice. I had, some really good trainers. A lot of guys didn't know the whole AAU part of things. There's a guy named Bob Marsh that I had, no longer doing it, but, start working with him on AAU. And he did it from here and there, but then I end up doing it full time. And so I had some really good mentors when I was coming up to really, set the tone. A lot of it was trial and error, because you go to Pennsylvania and you haven't been there before. You don't know where things are. You can't get around. There's no GPS. There's no internet. There's no social media, but you just figure it out. You do your research, you get into the library. The library was a thing back in the day.
Put the floppy disk in.
Put the floppy disk in. You get it. And then you go home and a landline was a thing. Rotary dial phones was a thing. You're listening to your Walkman and your Discman. Those are things that people don't even, if they see what we had to do back in the day. Oh my God.
Man, the struggle.
Yeah. But that made you more resilient, because you had to make things happen in that level, in that time, where without internet, GPS wasn't a thing. It didn't come around to like 2005, and I was doing my thing in the early 90s, So, it just made you that much more resilient and a thinker and a go-getter, because you had to do with what you had.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm laughing just thinking about all those times, or like just making plans with your homies on the weekend. You're like, hey, we'll meet here at this time. And there's no, like, once you're out the door, you're just assuming everybody's meeting at the spot, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Each other. Maybe one of the guys got a pager. That's about it.
Yeah, you got to run back home and go get a quarter, put in the payphone, and call them and make sure. And then when pagers came out, then that was big time. That's what you got a pager like that. When you got a pager and you had the scrolling messages on the bottom of it, I was like, oh my goodness, this is great. And then you still had to use that. Then you got a phone card, and then you could put the phone card in if you didn't have a quarter. So like, as time went on, things got bigger and better and easier, more convenient. And then finally I had my first phone. I think it was like, maybe mid-90s, late-90s, you had your first phone, and you only had, could use for like 20 minutes. And then you had to charge it with this big battery charger. And you had to call it after 6. Remember 6:06?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everybody's saving their minutes for that. Yeah.
Yeah. You had to save your minutes. So,
good.
It was a pure time. It was a pure time, because you just had to do with what you had.
Sounded like a couple old heads here, my man.
Those are the best times, though. The best times, because you just had to go with it and figure it out. You don't get people to help you with it, and wasn't just Google it and just put in the GPS and everything. You just had to figure it out and just do what you had. So you didn't complain. You just had to work, because that's what it was.
If you're a basketball player out there in the Lower Mainland or BC in general, and you're looking for somewhere to play, we have a proud sponsor, and that is PGC Hoops. You can find them at pgchoops.ca. And the thing that makes them unique, and that we're proud to sponsor them and them be a sponsor of us, is it's a true nonprofit basketball organization found in the east side of Vancouver. The mission is cost-effective elite basketball for all. find the website, take a look, register your kids, register yourself, look for the programs. And if you have any questions, reach out to me and we can contact you with the right people. This is a good program for the right reasons. We appreciate you, PGC Basketball. Love it. Now, you've used the term just had to work, talk about work a few times. When did you officially go full time with everything? Was it just right after high school? How did you go about the process of building it? Did you start, I'm just going to get one team going? Did you pull in some other guys to get a whole bunch of teams going? You know, like this is, you're way ahead of your time. You're way ahead of your time for this in Canada, man. Like it's, you already know this, but the era that we're talking about is, you must have got so many side eyes or what, yep. Or you know, and just the everything in between, right?
Definitely, I was scrutinized and vilified and everything. Everybody's like, what are you doing? It's not gonna work. You're not going along with the system. You're a rogue guy. You're trying to do your own thing. And that just motivated me to say, there must be something down this road to help these kids. And you stuck with it, you know what I'm saying? And you just, you just worked. You just got up and it was your passion. It's the thing you did. Because you used it as a ministry. You want to get kids as a young guy. And then all of a sudden, he's a grown young man and he has a scholarship. He got his degree. He qualified for college and he's on his way. So I grew up in Jane and Finch. And it was my ministry to help as many kids in that environment in the different hoods and everything to use their God-given talent to get education and become positive citizens in the community. And so, you know, up to date, I've had 550 guys go D1 and about 14 guys go to the NBA that I coached or trained.
Who were, top of your memory, who were some of the first, like, just maybe they didn't make it all the way to the NBA, but just most impactful for you in terms of relationship, but also helping build your programs and making them to the level they were? Like, who were the first few guys you're like, whoa, these guys can hoop and this is, did it happen quick? Did you come across some guys right away or what did that look like?
There's some guys that I bonded with and I worked with at a young age when I got started. And now it's great that they're doing their own thing in the same industry that you're in. First guy that comes to mind is Vidal Messiah, who started Northern Kings basketball program when I was in my early days. I took a liking to him and worked with him and helped him get a scholarship. And now he's paying it forward and he's helping a lot of kids and doing a lot of big things. He's the one that trained and worked with Zach Edey that's about hopefully get drafted. And then there's a guy named Antwi Atohini. He played with James Harden at Arizona State and have a longstanding relationship with him. And, he's like the same as and a great kid and very loyal and trustworthy like he was when we first got started. And there's so much. I really don't want to name a lot of guys because then you're going to miss some other ones. Cause you're going to say, fair. Oh yeah. And there was that guy. There was that guy. You don't want to name a lot of guys because there's so much guys that I'm very close to even this day. Sometimes I go to the gas station or the grocery store and some guy comes up to you and says, hey, remember you coached me, coach? What's up? You remember in 91, in 94, in 97? And then you're like, oh yeah, that's right. After looking at their face for 5 minutes. So it's a joy to find out, oh, I'm a doctor now. I'm an owner of a business now. I'm a teacher. I'm an engineer. I got 4 kids. I'm, you know, this and that. You know, now I'm even coaching some of my former players' sons, you know, and training some of their daughters. So it's great to, you know, how it's come full circle over the decades.
Yeah, don't worry about naming all the people because I'm going to put you on blast at the end and make you pick a few people. So don't worry about that. It's funny too, being a teacher. Like I tell my wife too, you know, if we go to the local mall or out near where our school is and I say, hey, listen, if we run into someone who looks 30 and they're like, Mr. Mitchell, and they shake my hand and I don't, you know, and I'm just going to introduce you so I can get their name because I can't remember. Because it happens though. You meet so many people over time and it's like, it's cool. Yeah. It's dope because you're like, wow, I had an impact on that person enough where they felt impelled to come out of their way and say something to me, right? If we didn't have a good relationship, no matter how much time, and they saw me, then they might have just turned the corner or kind of hid in the crowd, right? But they go out of their way to say something to you, I think says a lot about the importance of those relationships over time, right?
Yeah, definitely. Recently, I was watching this podcast that Damon Stoudemire was doing with a couple of former NBA guys, and they're talking about his time in Toronto. Mm. And then he was talking about...
Is that All the Smoke?
I'm not sure what it was called.
Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes, maybe? Yeah.
No, it was, I think, Darius Miles and Quentin Richardson.
Knuckleheads.
Knuckleheads, yeah. And
that's a fan favorite of mine.
He was talking about his time with the Raptors and his relationships and everything. And it's online. It's online because it was very humbling. You know, I give God the glory for that. But he was talking and he mentioned my name out of nowhere. He said, you know, Roy Russell, the Canadian legend and this and that. And like, I was like, wow, someone like that is mentioning my name out of all the millions of people he could mention. He mentioned my name and what he thought of me. So I even had an impact on him. You know what I mean? And so those kind of things kind of keep you going after sometimes you feel like, man, I'm too old for this. This is too much. The generation has changed. And then those kind of things kind of keep you going again because you say, okay, you know what? I did make an impact, you know? Obviously, you want to make an impact in the kids' lives, but, you know, it was good that you made an impact in someone that of that stature and that ability.
It's Mighty Mouse, man. That's big time.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I guess, too, they're probably along the road for you, obviously, knowing that you garnered a lot of attention throughout your career, goods, bads, in-betweens, controversy, like you say. Is it moments like that? Like, what makes you keep going? Now, I was doing some research and I saw an episode from a couple of years ago and you're announcing your retirement. Is that still true to this day? Because you're telling me you're just coming back from camp, man. It sounds to me like the hooks are still in.
Yeah, the hooks are definitely still in. You know, after you feel, you know, take some time off or maybe you got to move on and then, you know, you feel that urge and that you get that bug to go back into again. You feel like there's unfinished business and you're very relevant still. And then some kid comes along or something and you say, I'm going to get back into it. So after I retired from Crestwood Prep that I built up from scratch, I just stumbled on this phenom and he was like 6'1". And his father called me out of nowhere and said, are you this coach, Roy Russell? And I said, yes. And he's like, I think my son's supposed to work with you. And I said, why do you think that? And he's like, because I read all about you and I feel that you're the guy to work with. I said, okay, how tall is your son? And he's like 6'1". And I said, okay, that's a good size, but you know, that's not that tall. Then he goes, he's 10. And I'm like, okay, I'll be at your house in 5 minutes. And now the kid, after a year of working with the kid, when he just started basketball, he's ranked number one in North America for his class. And he's 6'5 now and he's dunking two hands and he has pro potential. So those kind of situations, you know, motivate you, inspire you to get back in it again, to, you know, ride these kids through and mentor them and get them back to the promised land to make sure that I haven't done it for so many times that you know exactly what to do.
What's your approach when that happens? So do you ask for some film first and come up with a plan, or do you just take this kid to the gym right away and sort of feed him the ball, do some footwork stuff, you know, just basic things, see where his fundamentals are at? Like, what's the approach there for you?
Yes. If I'm able to get to the person, he lives in the, you know, in a proximity to me, then I just go to them, meet them at a gym and then work them and evaluate them. And if they're from another province or the States, then you get some videotape and then you see what it looks like. And then you maybe reach out to some friends and some scouts that you know in that area and do some research on it in background. And then you go from there. And eventually you have them come up to I've had a lot of kids over the years that have come from BC, you know, in order to see them work. And then I work with them. I've helped maybe about 10 guys or so from BC over the decades, you know, from different places, from Mission, from White Rock, from Surrey, from Vancouver itself, from Richmond, all over, you know, to all the way to, you know, PEI, you know, so, you know, there's players everywhere. You just got to find them and find the hidden gems that are out there.
Yeah, man, for sure. I'm curious on one thing. So you start, you know, traveling teams. People can say what they want, but your name is forever connected to being the OG of this, as far as I'm concerned. You know, prep leagues. How quickly, from an Ontario perspective, do you see things start to take off and change? How does the landscape change? Because we're in this out west here. You know, we just finished the high school championships. We get 5,000 people to watch the final. It's packed, but we have so many clubs now and so many kids playing both and doing everything. So it's almost like we're about a decade behind you guys, I would say. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but in the sense of when you first started this whole thing, how quickly did it take for, was it a competition thing where dudes like, yo, I want to do that too, and I want to beat Rose ass? Or is it like, that seems like a really good opportunity? Or, you know, how quickly did things change out there?
Well, things changed gradually because at first it was new, what I was doing, and you got a lot of pushback and a lot of negative comments about what you're doing. And it was new and different and it was hard. Mm-hmm. And first you had a lot of, the high school coaches were upset at me. The college coaches were upset at me. The university coaches, because they're losing kids to junior colleges, to high schools and prep schools in the States, to D1 programs. The provincial bodies didn't like you because you're doing something else at the time. They want to play nationals and the provincial team. The Team Canada didn't like you because you're traveling and you're doing your own international competition and everything. So everybody's like, what's this guy doing? And you're looking out for the kids and the bottom line. And so that's your motivation and that's your focus. So you just do what you do and you don't listen to all the noise. Mm-hmm. And then eventually everybody joins you and says, you know what? That worked. That's a good idea. I'm going to do it too. Mm-hmm. So the same people that, you know, were ridiculing you and were negative, now they joined it. And that's vindication to know that what you're thinking, but way before, it works. Like, I was doing prep schools in 2000. I was the only prep school program in Canada. And I was always going to the States and no one would play us. And they're saying, oh, this is not good. And you're doing online courses. And now they're saying online courses not good. Now everyone does online courses. And now there's prep schools all over that even mandated by the different provincial bodies and so forth. So it's good. It's humbling to see and flattering to know that what you did and started before, it's finally caught on. And now competition is good because it keeps you on your toes, right? It keeps, it gets everybody an opportunity because you're not the only one. Because I remember when I was the only AU program in Canada and you only could do so much. You could only have three teams. And there's like maybe 100 guys that you need to try to take care of. So now there's a lot of programs out there to help these kids get that competition, the development, the exposure. So it's a good thing. It's a good for the growth of Canada because not everybody needs to go down to prep school in the States. Some people could stay here and still get that exposure. So now you have situations like Thon Maker and Jamal Murray and Lugans Dortz that did it from Canada. So now that shows that it could be done. You know, even Elijah Fisher, you know, had a very illustrious career, one of the best ever, you know, playing in Canada and being ranked super high and having a lot of offers. So, you know, you kind of, you know, get to change the landscape and being a pioneer of sorts in this whole thing. So it's good, you know, to build that legacy and show that anyone could do anything if you put your mind to it and you just work. That's why my big moniker is work. Just work it. I'm just working. You know, WORRKKIINN. You're working.
I love it.
Yeah.
And it's funny too, because, you know, we still have the CCAA, right? And then U Sport. But I think what's happened with COVID is there's a backlog, right? So a kid that's 17 or 18, there's not a lot of places for these kids to go right out of high school anymore. You know, if you're not, like a Division I athlete, it's because, you know, like we had a really good point guard last year. He's looking to sign somewhere this year. He played prep in Ontario for half the year. But you say UVic's talking to him and they're like, well, we graduate two guys and we have three red shirts and they're all 25, 26 and 27, you know, and this guy's like 18 years old, soaking wet. And it's like, that's literally a boy and a man, you know? And I think like with COVID, there's just, it seems to have been like a backlog. I don't know if you feel that. It's just, these guys are graduating and there's not a lot of places for them to go. My question to you is, do you think high school and prep can survive? Out here, it's a big controversy. It's a big thing. Pash is obviously going to try to start his own thing out here. And at the end of the day, as like someone who's a high school coach and teacher coach, I love the high school game. I grew up with the high school game. But I'm not going to lose sleep over it because people's feet will do the talking, right? If the kids want to go to the academy and the prep thing and it keeps up, then that's what they'll choose to do, right? If they want to play high school, that's what they'll choose to do. But do you think there's enough bodies to make both work, or it one day, like I know out in Ontario, the high school championship is kind of just whatever, right? It's almost like the prep league is the upper echelon now.
Exactly. I think that with the, I remember 10 years ago, maybe 15, I said, they're going to do away with the conventional high school scenario in Ontario. You said before there's 5,000 people watching the provincial championship. There might've been 500, if that, watching the Ontario provincial championship. And now prep school reigns supreme, you know, because there's maybe 2,000 watching the prep school championships in Toronto. And college coaches are there and the whole nine. So with the advent of the transfer portal in the NCAA, and then even U Sports is following that trend, colleges, you know, they don't want to get fired. They need to take care of their family. So they need ready guys. They need older guys, like you said before. They need a 24-year-old, a 25-year-old that can come in and have that maturity and that experience, that know-how to step in and play, rather than learn and develop and get to that level, and you have to babysit them and the whole nine. So because of that, high school basketball is almost obsolete in Ontario right now. And eventually, like you said, Pasha is going to start a prep school in BC, then someone else is going to start one, and someone else is going to start one. And after a while, those top kids from all those different high schools are going to go to those prep schools. And then after a while, there's going to be only prep schools that are relevant, because right now Division I player coaches aren't going to high school competition in BC and Alberta and Manitoba and all over the place anymore. Before they would go the odd time, but they're not going anymore. They want you to go to prep school in the States or Ontario, and they'll come and see you there. You know what I mean? And so the advent of the transfer portal has made it so hard, you know, that kids don't get an opportunity. They're trying to find spots that, you know, they got to go to junior college. They got to go to college. They got to go to D2. They got to go to NEIA, you know, because, you know, there's so much older guys, you know, at U Sports or D1. So they can't even get in there like they used to. So I think eventually it'll work itself out, and kids will start training earlier, taking care of their bodies earlier, being ready academically, maturing earlier to have a chance and an opportunity to go somewhere. But and they'll get in where they fit in. They'll go to JUCO, they'll go to any other route. And then U Sports is, in the meantime, is gonna really benefit from it, because now they the kids gotta go somewhere. So if they can't go D1, they're gonna go U Sports. And then maybe after U Sports, after a couple of years, they're going to transfer to D1 or something like that. So, you know, it's a whole mixing of leagues and levels are going on right now. And it's very competitive, and a lot of stuff's going on. So you just got to stay the course and stay with it and work harder and just go with the flow.
I remember I was reading an article on Nick Saban, just talking about the transfer portal, and he knew that he was going to be done because, some of his main guys were already basically saying, like, mid-season, like, how much are you going to pay me next year? And, you know, so it's like, it's created all so many, like, and I'm not opposed to NCAA athletes getting paid, but it just seems like it's kind of the Wild West right now in terms of there's just so much movement, right? And, you know, if you're a mid-level guy, you get on a team, there's no guarantee that you're going to, like, the idea of working through a freshman, sophomore, junior year and then getting minutes in your junior year are kind of obsolete now. It's like, do you find just the best fit right away? You know, it's like, it's such a wild, interesting thing we're going through. What are your thoughts with kind of the portal and all that? And will it kind of just over time, like you say, already talked about with the club, do you think it'll just sort of level out and it'll figure itself out through time?
Yeah, it'll figure itself out through a lot of time because it takes a while for everybody, because now people are going to the D1 and D2 and even youth sports from all over the world. So it'll take some time for all those different levels and areas in the world to figure it out. And it's a matter of people understanding what it is, how it's changed, and now let's adjust and let's try to get in there. So I think the NCAA will make some rule changes to make it a little bit easier for players, but with all those college coaches getting fired all the time and not being able to take care of their family, they want older guys that can help their program out right away. Unfortunately, it's not like it was before. Before, they wanted high school kids, but now they want transfers that can help them out and not allow them to, or hopefully not allow them to lose their jobs. You know, so that's what it's all about now. So, you know, it's something that you got to, if you want to get in that world, that's what you have to get to. You have to get to that point where you too have to figure it out. Sometimes you might have to go where you don't want to go. So, but you can't always get the perfect fit. Sometimes you just got to get in where you get in. And then after a while you get better. And then you know, maybe you transfer somewhere else after when it's your turn, because now the key is being a transfer. So you might have to go wherever. And then after you get better and wiser and more ready, now you could be a transfer as well and take advantage of that how the trend is moving.
Like my man Too Short said, you got to get in where you fit in.
Exactly. That's what it is now. No more of like, hey, I'll look for the best fit. Sometimes you got to look wherever you can get in, like you said.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, one more sort of question I want to get, because I got you here and I want to take advantage of this, and then we'll find out what your favorite cereal is and you can go whatever it is you got to do for the rest of the night. Sound good?
Sure, sounds good.
Okay, man. So one of the big things that's always been interesting to me is, you know, when it comes to club and prep and things like that, there is money involved, right? So if you were to give advice to a parent who's looking at, they're out in BC, in the Lower Mainland, I can't even name how many clubs there are now, right? What would be some advice that you would give to a parent who's got, you know, a young son or daughter that's interested in basketball, is a pretty good athlete? How would you have them go through the process in terms of figuring out what's the, like you talked about, the best fit? Tough one, huh? Yeah. Yeah, got you. Yeah, finally. He's been talking while I made him pause there. Let's go.
No,
okay.
Just a little pause, but yeah. Basically, if you're coming from outside Ontario, you have to get a trainer that works with your skill, works with your body, a strength conditioning coach. Then you're gonna have to play AAU to get familiarized with what's out there. Someday you're gonna be able to play at that level, and you got to see where the competition are and what your peers are and what it takes to get there, because you might be a really good player in BC or Alberta or so forth, but you need to play against the best of the best to really see what it takes to get there. And then you have to go back to the drawing board and back to the lab and get your game even better and get your mindset even more ready. Then, unfortunately, you're going to have to go to prep school either in America or Canada, because, you know, you scoring 45 a game ain't going to help you against guys that you know, don't put pressure on you, that don't press, that stay back and don't put their hands up and aren't that physical. And when you get there, you know, you're not going to be able to cope. And so you got to prepare yourself by be able to go to prep school, either in Ontario or in America. So those
and
are
so if you're, if you're, if you're, if you're a father of a kid who's making those choices, how, what's advice would you give them on how to pick? Is it getting to know the coaches there? Is it asking former players? Like, how do you make that choice? Cause you're almost making like, it's like a university choice, but not university yet, if you know what I mean, right? So you're planning to leave your home to go play somewhere. If you were a family, how would you, you know, like, why would anyone want to play for you? What's your, you know, why would a person want to come and play at your program other than knowing your name and your stature and how long you've done it for? Do you get what I'm saying with that?
Yes.
Yeah. What's your thoughts?
So basically,
my point is like, there's so many, right? So yeah, how do you narrow it down? Like you said, there's never going to be the perfect fit. Yeah.
So yeah, you do your research, you ask around, and you go and visit, and you sit down, and you think of the hard questions, and you do all the checklist things you need to do. Am I going to get exposure? My son's going to get exposure. Is my son going to be able to train all the time? Is my son going to get the preparedness to go to that level? What leagues are they in? Do they go to the States and play competition, you know, and be somewhere where they're going to get all that? Because if they're not going to get all that, it's a waste of time to spend all this money, and that person ain't going to be able to get what they want. You know, who's the director of the prep school? Who's the coach of the prep school? What's his resume? How many players has he helped? So you have to ask a series of questions. So the good thing for me is, like, I've been there, done that. You know what I mean? And we have the ability to really work with kids every day. So therefore, you know, that's very good to prepare yourself and your body. We went to the States maybe 15 times this year. So you need to do that, and you play in the top leagues and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you have to do your research and do the best you can and ask around and everything like that. So, you know, you just got to search and you'll find a really good fit that can help you to get that opportunity. And then you have to be open. You can't think that you're going to go D1 because that door is almost closed. It's like right now, there's like a squeak in the door, the D1 door to get in. So now you got to look at the D2 door, the U Sports door, the JUCO door, because the D1 door is almost closed, and only a very small handful can get in now. And until you're transfer, when you're transfer, it opens up a little bit more. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's what I suggest.
Whatever you're doing right now, listening at work, rolling in your whip, walk, going for a walk, whatever it is, hang on for a sec. You like jerseys? You like Stance socks? You like throwback? You like shoes? You like anything related to basketball? Hit up ATOB Ball. And if you're not able to be there in store at Langley Event Center, check them out on the web, and I guarantee you'll find something you like. Give us a mention and you'll never know. Shout out to our boy Jeff. ATOB Ball for life. Yeah, good stuff. Right on. Thanks for that. I like how you said the hard questions, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's good. All right, let's do this. You ready?
Yes.
Appreciate your time. Okay, artist or artists can be dead or alive. It's up to you, man. You got the best seat in the house. Who are you going to see? What's a concert you want to go to? Maybe you've seen them already. Maybe you've always wanted to. Give us an idea of what's on Coach Russell's playlist when he's dropping the kids off. Does he conform and play that 2024 trap music, or is he bumping whatever he's got? What is it?
Well, just people. So some people know what I'm about. Well, basically, my nickname is the Rev, and that is because I'm a born again Christian, okay. And I'm unconventional,
like Rev Run.
Yeah, you'll see me at you know, the church choir concert and the old school, you know, gospel music. That's the kind of things that I'm about, positivity and
you
values.
Singing? Are you singing?
No, I'm just singing in my mind. I'm singing in my mind.
So we're not testing the vocals. I just wanted to make that clear.
Testing the vocals. Yeah. So I don't like all that things are about all the negativity in the world and all that stuff. I'm about positivity and about love and life and all that kind of good stuff. So that's you'll find me at a gospel concert or a church choir concert.
And for the record, not singing, just taking it in.
Just taking it in.
Okay.
And lip syncing. Singing,
that's
yeah.
That's fair. Kay, you are on the road for a tournament. You're feeling a little snacky. You're going to grab a bag of chips. Is there a certain bag of chips that you're a sucker for?
Oh, yes. My favorite chips is Dorito Chili Heat.
Oh, the sweet chili heat.
Sweet chili heat. That's my favorite. It has a little tang, little hotness. It's perfect. It's a perfect combination. Because I'm a big oxtail guy.
And, yes, sir.
The perfect oxtail is it's hot, but it's also sweet. You know, it's just perfect. And so sweet chili heat is like that in the chips area.
I love it. That's a classic. Yeah. If you had a choice, when you do have downtime, are you reading books or are you watching movies?
I was a big book guy, you know, before the internet. I was a big encyclopedia guy. I love history and information and stuff. Why did this happen? How did this happen? How did this come to be? I was big to that. So now because of that, I'm a big YouTube guy. I like to do my research and find out, you know, the whole story behind, you know, how things came to be, how this country came to be, all these different historical things. I'm big. I'm a really, really big history nut, you know. So I used to write books. I read books. The biggest book I read is the Bible when I do read. But nowadays, I also, you know, do the audio books of the Bible and other, even basketball audio books and so forth. I like those autobiographies and those coaches' autobiographies as well.
Okay, now, don't take this the wrong way because I was not judging at all. But when I was thinking about what some of your answers might be, historical nut, I did not have. So, ladies and gentlemen, you gotta have an open mind when you meet people, man. That is fantastic. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. That's dope. Amazing.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right. Who have been some of the most important people in your life up to this point? You know, early in the episode, you touched on a couple mentors, but are there some other people that have played a significant role in supporting you to getting you to where you are today?
Yes. The first, you know, people say it all the time, but I have to say it, you know, so
Aaron Mitchell and then God.
So the Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior, that's my ultimate right there. Person who I lean to and I take all my who I am and what I'm about first. And then, my mom. So the reason why I'm like what I am and I'm resilient and I'm a go-getter is because my mom was the same way when I was growing up. I was watching her do all the things that, you know, she's done, and that shaped me. And then my older sister, who passed away, she was also one of my biggest ever mentors and role models. And so it's all the women in my life, my wife, you know, for me to be able to travel and do the things I do. And when I was early on, I was traveling, she was taking care of the kids and holding down the forts and all that stuff. Another woman in my life. And I have a adopted daughter. Her name is Liana Osei. And she, even though she's my daughter, she's such a strong woman. And she's done so much in the time she spent on the earth. And, you know, she's a youth sports head coach and prep school coach and started our own business called Can Leads and everything. So a lot of the strongest figures in my life has been women that either I work with or brought me into this world or live with me. And and they've been really very, very special in my life. You know what I mean?
Good answer, man. Oof. And you'll come out smelling roses with that too, all the shout outs you just gave. I think that's dope too. My wife and I, we have an adopted son as well. He's 7 years old. So that's cool, man. And you, I was thinking about what you're saying about your mom and just sort of like, I'm sure you picked up on things when you're older, but when we're younger, they're so impressionable, right? Our kids are always watching us. They're always taking note on like everything we do, how we communicate with our spouse, how we react to something, you know? So it's quite a trip, man. And that's some really good reflection. I love that. The women in your life too. Well done, man. Good.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously a lot of guys have been very, very instrumental.
Yeah.
I've been very instrumental to my life, but women as well have been very, very instrumental.
For sure. And I'm assuming that some of those, you know, those mentors and coaches, they know, right? So it's good to get the real ones out on the pod, though. You got to give the shout out. Do you have a hidden talent that that nobody knows about?
Yes. I'm a very, very good table tennis player. I love, other than basketball, I love table tennis. I'm very competitive.
I could tell you were smiling before this answer.
You're nice
with it on the ping, and he didn't even call it ping pong. He said table tennis, so you know he's ready.
Yes, yeah. All the slices and the serves.
Come on.
And
do you give it the big toss on the serve?
Yes. You got to toss it up.
Yes.
And all that. So I'm really good with that. I'm very competitive. When I was younger, my best friend in my elementary school, his name was Ben Lee. And I used to go to his house every day after school, and we just play table tennis all the time until my mom would call me home. So I became very good at it. And over the decades, that's what I love to play, my downtime, my fun time, the whole nine.
Wow. This is a fairly new, this is a fairly new question to the podcast, but we've had some great answers. That one's up there. I love it. We need to see that. We need some Roe Russell, like 1v1 table tennis challenge against someone. That'd be dope.
Yeah, definitely. I'll work on that.
Okay. What's the greatest cereal of all time, do you think?
For me, mm-hmm. it would be Oatmeal Crisp.
Oh.
With almonds and honey.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's there's some health benefits there, but it's really, really good. It really tastes well. And, you know, a lot of times I'll just munch on it. You know, I'll eat it for cereal, but you can munch on it like trail mix. You know what I mean?
Dry.
Yeah, just dry and so forth. So that's my favorite cereal, Oatmeal Crisp.
Love it. Love it. Two more.
Okay, sure.
Now you can take this however you want. You can be the coach or you can be a player, but we're taking a squad, but it's outdoor, it's blacktop, it's, you know, call your own twos and threes to 21, whatever. And you're going to run with either you're coaching, you got five guys or four and you. They could be some guys that you coach. They could be maybe some of your favorite players all time, however you want to take that. But you need a squad. It's a nice day down at Kitts Beach here in Vancouver. And you got to make sure you know, you're not losing for about an hour. You got to run things for a while. So who are you taking?
You mean all time?
Up to you.
Wow. Well, obviously, if I want to win the game, I'm going all time.
Okay.
I'm not taking high school guys, only your college guys. I want all time. So the first one I'll take is my favorite player of all time. His name is Pistol Pete.
Woo!
Yeah, Pistol Pete Maravich. He was so beyond his years. He shaped so much NBA guys that took a lot of his talent. Jason Williams, Steve Nash, a lot of those guys, they owe a lot of their game to Pistol Pete. The things he does was like way beyond his time. And so he's so skilled. He has the NCAA for men scoring title in 3 years. He only played 83 games. And he scored over 4,500 points. And there was
no three-point line. Man,
and also no 30-second shot clock, you know. And so I must admit that I got a little bit, taken back a little bit when they're saying that Caden Clark was now the all-time NCAA leading scorer for men's and women's, because there's a big asterisk there. You know, she's a great player and she's done great for the women's game. But in terms of what Pistol Pete did in 3 years with no 3-point line, it's extraordinary. So he's my first guy. Obviously, the best player of all time, I think, is Michael Jordan. So now we got three. And the most dominating big man of all time is Shaq. So I'm taking Shaq to block shots, rebound, dunk on people, and do all of his antics and everything like that. And my favorite point guard of all time is Magic Johnson, in terms of his height at 6'9", being able to pass and get to the basket and just know how to play and how to get everybody involved. Because you can't have five scorers. You have to have someone that defines guys. Because I can shoot the ball pretty good. So yep. I need someone to find me. I need someone to give me those easy shots. So that's my five right there.
I love it. Magic's my favorite player ever. That's amazing. Good. I'm thinking you're going to have no problem running that day. I think you guys will be all right.
We'll be okay. We'll be okay.
I don't see too many L's. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, man. This has been great. I really appreciate you taking the time. The last question we ask every guest, though, and I don't know how many episodes you've seen or if you even know, so you might throw out a name that we've already had on, because we pride ourselves on covering East to West Coast as much as we can. But is there someone out there you'd like to see on our podcast? But the only thing is, you're the plug. So you need to be the connect. So don't throw out a name and someone's going to be like, yo, Ro, really? You're going to make me go on some podcast? Like, someone that you think's got a good story. They don't have to be Canadian, but someone who's like, you know, involved in the game in any aspect, but you think would be a good guest to chop it up with me on the show.
Okay, sure. Yeah, definitely. First guy that comes to mind is, his name is Patrick Shaw. He's a pioneer of sorts. He's one of my best friends. You know, he helped the girls game get to what it is. He's a great community guy. He's the director of operations at Royal Crown Academy, and you know, he's someone that helped shape the landscape of girls basketball in Canada and in general, you know. Okay. And he's a great guy, and he's someone that I, you know, speak to all the time. He's also one of my mentors. He's probably my only mentor that I'm older than.
Ah, I love that.
Yeah, he's younger than me by a few years, and you know, he gives me great advice, and he's in my corner, and you know, we have a very, very good relationship.
Dope. Perfect. Love it. Hey, you're the plug on that.
Yeah, I'll definitely get you in contact with him, and he has a lot to say, a lot to tell, and he's touched a lots of lives so over the decades.
Nice, man. That's great. Perfect. Look forward to connecting with him. Well, man, this has been fantastic. You know, things that you don't know, you know, like we just had Michael Bartlett from Canada Basketball on, and a gentleman just reached out to me, and he sent me this long message last week, which was a reminder to get in touch with you again, just talking about your history. He literally said, you and Mr. Wayne Dawkins, his history with developing phase one and grassroots basketball alongside Ro Russell's well-documented, and the impact Ro had on the game in Canada is massive. And he goes on and on to speak highly of you. And so,
wow.
I was intrigued. Yeah, man. So you never know. And, I was really intrigued to sit down with you because I pride myself on being an open-minded guy, and you know, that CBC story can kick sand as far as I'm concerned. I want to get to know people and connect with those that I should, right? And I appreciate you taking the time and all that you've done for the game. Any last sort of thoughts, ideas, reflections before we let you go, and continued success. Who knows when the day comes when you officially retire, but when you think about the impact you've had on the game and how many people you've been able to connect with and touch, it must be a good feeling, man.
Definitely. I guess I'd like to go out by saying that, you know, a lot of great people in the history of the world have had, you know, some obstacles and some, you know, some controversial issues come about with them, and to show their character, to go through some tough times. And I thank the Lord that I was able to get through a lot of tough times and get back to some great times, you know. Mm-hmm. So everything's not going to be, you know, roses all the time. You're going to have to show your character and your worth and your value by being tested. And it was great that I was tested at some junctures over my career and was able to rise above it all and and to really show who I really am and what I've done and leave that as my legacy. So like you said, you know, that whole CBC documentary, they tried to, you know, put me down, but it was thank the Lord that I was able to rise above all that and show who I really am.
Good on you, man. And then not knowing you from anything until we met on the episode here, like I said, the way that so many people on this podcast itself, our guests have talked about you, you know, when I got off the phone with you the other day, just I text Harp right away and just said, hey, you know, we're finally going to get Roe on. And first thing he said, oh, that's so dope. And he's like, he's done so much for me. Right. So you're still helping people that maybe to you is a quick text or a call, but it's helping mentor young people in the game. And that's what it's all about, man. Paying it forward, continuing to help grow the game and continuing to keep Canada on the map, man. So thank you for all you've done and continue to do.
I really, really appreciate it. And I really enjoyed being on your podcast, Aaron. And, you know, definitely we'll keep in touch with it. And I'm not finished yet. I got some years to go and some kids to develop, some gyms, some guys to drop home and all that stuff. So, you know, this is me. This is what I do. And thank God that I've been able to impact the world. That's what my mom told me from when I was younger. And she's like, son, you know, don't be a regular person. Just don't be an average kid. Like, impact the world and make your presence felt and what you do. And so that really moved me and motivated me to do what I do. So, you know, I give a lot of credence to my mom.
Love that. What a great way to finish. And he'll be doing it, working. Eyes and ends. And, you know?
Working it.
Love it. Episode 130. Thank you to all our listeners. Thank you to Coach Roe for being with us. Thank you to our sponsors. And we'll see you on the next one.